is jazz artist and Channel 4 News anchor Tom Reynolds. When I want the 411, I get the 411 with Sharon Kay on 88.1 FM WFSK.
That's right. Let me say hello to Nashville. Hey, everybody. How are you doing out there? And also to the global family. What's up? At WFSKFM.org. We are delighted, as always, absolutely, to have you with us this Wednesday afternoon. Going to come back with some more take you home traffic reports for you. And of course, Ron will have the news at the top of the hour, so you'll try not to miss too much on your way home this afternoon. Well, how many people that you know in North Carolina X and South Carolina and the Carolinas and Virginia and all that stuff that are battening down the hatches, man?
Prayerfully, all my friends and family.
I know it.
I have a lot of family in all three of
them. Oh, that's
places.
Right. You sure do.
Yeah, my mom's from North Carolina.
And are they close by, you know, like the coastline there?
My cousin in Virginia is Wilmington. Yes, they're near it.
Okay. Did they evacuate? Did you know what?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just put a message up on Facebook and said, I'm praying for
that.
You.
So, okay. Yeah. Well, amen.
I don't have time to tag everybody and call. Yeah. Just, hey. They know.
Well, they know. They're more than
yeah,
up on
they
it.
Should be, yes.
Oh, certainly. I mean, it's on every newscast, every conversation. Yeah. You know, when you got battening down the hatches, everybody la-di-da-di, honey. You don't need social media. You just know, oh my God, we got this weather thing coming.
Right. Right.
And being on that coast like that, they're already fully aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're living in the hurricane season and blasés. Because when I used to live in Virginia, you know, you knew in the Tidewater area, you already knew what was going down,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't wonder. I wonder what's going to happen.
No such thing as global warming, huh?
No, absolutely not. Where do you people get that from?
Okay.
You PayPal. Where do y'all get that from? That's what they say. No, I mean, hurricanes are, this is not really, you know, hurricanes come this time of year, every year, global warming or not, or climate change or not. This they have. This is just the time, the season. So every time the wind blows different or something is different, it doesn't necessarily mean the ozone layer or whatever, you know. It just, that's the way the Mother Nature is handling the business. And for people that plan trips or travel, you know, I'm certain that they have an idea before they leave, but, you know. And sometimes, maybe not. You never know, because I mean, just today's a different place, a different world, Lord. It's a different world. Anyway, having said that, we have community news this afternoon. Today's leadership topic and book, Culture, Your Culture, Innovating Experiences at Work. And we'll be talking about how the workplace is transformed and a lot of people adjusting to things, you know, skill sets, etc. Some people are ready for the change that's come and some are not. But first, before we do our book discussion for today, and then at 5 o'clock, Dr. Sean Joseph, the director of Metro Schools, is paying us another visit again, and we'll check in with him at 5. Now, Lisa Spales is a friend of the broadcast and a friend of the station and a friend of Fisk. And Lisa, you know, when I see you have something going on, because, you know, I know you're one of our faithful volunteers, then I have to bring it to the attention of the listening audience. And I know your organization has, Laughter is the Best Medicine Health and Arts Program, has long been having a variety of events in the community. And I know that this is a busy time of year for you. So I thought you would make some good community news today.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited about what we are doing in so many ways and what we've done all year and over the past year. So, Sharon, let me say to you and X, this is a true honor and a pleasure to share with Nashville, Davidson County community and all of the surrounding areas who are faithful listeners to Jazzy 88.
Thank you. And they are faithful, honey. Okay. Now, you have a September 23rd. There's going to be a lovely fundraiser there. What do you have going on?
Cremona Strings Ensemble 2, nonprofit organization that provides free violin, viola, cello, and bass lessons to anyone 4 years and older, will host their first ever wine tasting fundraiser. And it is at the Manor at Long Hunter and Hermitage, 37076. Everybody needs to come. We are partnering with Parks and Recreation, Tennessee Aquatic Project, with the scuba divers. And, yes, there's a swimming pool. So you might want to put your suits on for the last time during this year. And have music, gringo stars, a Spanish group, Sin. We have Allman Brothers guitarist, John Prestia, the Cremona Strings, of course, John Bowman, JB, comedy. We have so much going on, plus fabulous samplings of whites and reds and prosecco's and sparklings and wines with the best foods ever.
Well, so you know, if you're having a fundraiser, everything has to be the best.
Yes.
Definitely.
And it's affordable, Sharon Kay.
Yes.
We set the pricing at $90 per ticket in advance, and we've made it easy for you to get tickets. There are five locations.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook events, and that's on our Cremona Strings NP site, brownpapertickets.com, localwineevents.com, eventbrite.com, and allevents.in. Hermitage CSET, that's a long one.
Yeah.
But the easiest way to find all of the locations is go to
google.com. Okay.
Type in CSETNP, Wine Tasting and Fundraising, and then let's get to party.
Now, Lisa, for those that may not know what, you know, Cremona Strings is going to benefit from it, but can you explain more about, give us a capsule on the quick history and who the Cremona Strings serve?
Happily. Robert Bob Holmes, let's start with him, because he is the reason for the Cremona Strings. In the late 50s, early 60s, Bob Holmes taught with Nashville Public Schools, went to the school board, asked if he could teach, at that time segregated schools, black children strings. He was told no, because black children didn't have the aptitude to play strings. He was not going to allow that negativism to keep black children from playing strings, so he started a group of young students outside of the school, and we became the Cremona Strings. We performed everywhere. As we grew older, Bob Holmes was at Fisk University. He started the jazz excursion, and we, of course, followed him there and performed. And when he passed, we were determined, some of us who are still playing our instruments and learn from him, to keep his heritage, his name, his legacy alive. So in 2005, we began the professional side, Cremona Strings Ensemble 2, and we perform at many locations for many variety of sets and venues and purposes. But in 2011, we realized that school systems here in Nashville and other places were decreasing the arts. Even though there are schools that have for the arts programs, the string programs were diminishing and have still continued to diminish. In 2011, we started a free string music education program. You have all of the excuses removed, because at 4 years of age and older, We provide the instruments, the music, music stands, so there's no excuse for you if you're socioeconomically disadvantaged. We cater to all cultures, and boy, do we work hard, and our students are really good. We perform at places like the Hard Rock Cafe, this past weekend, Tennessee State Fairgrounds, Arts at the Airport. We've got a lot of partnerships. One of them, Metro Nashville Parks and Recreation, we love them because they are the venues where we have our lessons. Coleman Park, first Saturday, second Saturday, Southeast, Hadley, third, fourth East, and fifth Saturday's McKay, but you have to attend each of the lessons from 8 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock. It is family friendly.
Okay.
So parents, it is not a drop-off program. It is an inclusive program.
Okay.
You come with your child.
Okay, now what instruments would they be specific about that? Do they have to have their own, or are you all making instruments available?
They do not have to have their own. In January, we assess the numbers of people. In February, first and second Saturdays, we issue violins, violas, cellos, and contrabasses or acoustic basses to the students of all ages. And we have music stands, and we have the music to get them started. And not only are they taught how to play classical music, they are learning other genres as well. They take theory and composition, foreign language. We work on education. They do PowerPoint presentations and poster presentations of composers. It is truly a holistic educational experience.
No question about it. And you are, and it's open to, it, you know, anybody in the community that has a student that's interested in a string instrument.
We don't turn anyone away as long as if your child, your parent is participating.
Yeah.
Or if you have no children and you just want to come and play, come join us.
Oh, okay. The grown-ups can do it, too. Okay.
Oh, yes. Our oldest is over 60.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
Has anybody gone on to, you know, play like symphony or any place like that, orchestra or anything?
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kay Roberts. Kay Roberts was former student of Bob Holmes. She is also a conductor. Boston University is where she has taught, and she's conducted internationally. But she used to get invitations to come as a guest conductor here for the Nashville Symphony. Yes.
Okay.
If you go down to the Skirmelhorn, to the Education Hall, you'll see a picture of one of our original members. His name is Michael M. Brady, with a cello that his father made for him as a child. He also arranges and composes music for our groups.
Excellent. So it's a good experience, and it's a good community to be involved in. Sounds like a very supportive atmosphere too, Lisa.
It is. We're family friendly.
Excellent. Now, do you have a number you want to give? I know you gave a bunch of online locations. Give a date, time, place, and what the event is, and these remaining minute or so I have with you. And also, do you have a phone number you can put in with this?
We do. 615-226-1265. The best way is to reach us through the internet. CremonaStrings@yahoo.com.
Okay, CremonaStrings@yahoo.com. And hopefully folks will, and particularly the ones who have enjoyed hearing the Cremona Strings. Because you all played, weren't you at the Fontanelle one time?
Yeah, okay. We've been everywhere.
Yeah. Well, you're just everywhere.
The SU Performing Arts Center and State Fairgrounds, as I said, Cheekwood, National Public Library, Memorial Home Lodge for the American Cancer Society. Boy, Hard Rock was one of the, actually this past Saturday we were at the State Fairgrounds on the Music Stage, which was so much fun. Hard Rock is always fun. We've even performed at the Nashville Symphony.
Okay, so they will have an opportunity, if they're part of the Strings, to travel around the city with you guys and playing at some of those wonderful locations.
I'm telling you, it's a rewarding experience, and it's even more rewarding, Sharon and X, when I have successful students who really enjoy the music. We have a little girl right now. She's just turned 10.
Mm-hmm.
She's been with us a couple of years. We're preparing her for her first recital.
Mm-hmm.
She is excellent. First year, first violin, and phenomenal.
Excellent.
We have a luthier who is taking lessons, but he has also made violins for several of our members, and they are the best sounding. He's in Nunley. His name is Ray DeMeo. Fabulous luthier, and the workmanship is like getting an instrument from Cremona, Italy.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, I hear the helicopter, and I do hope that that means we've got traffic coming. I do hope that people do come out and support the wine tasting fundraiser on September 23rd. And what's the location again?
The Manor at Long Hunter,
okay.
3365 Hobson Pike, 37076.
That sounds like Antioch to me.
It is Antioch Hermitage, that's what they call it.
Okay.
But Sharon Kay, I'm looking for you to come and have a great time, bring your people, and we will have a wonderful, adventurous, fun-loving, hugging event.
Absolutely. And I probably know some of the people there. So, Lisa, thank you for the invitation, and I'll probably
see
you then, okay?
Thank you, darling.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. That's Lisa Spells with the Cremona Strings and their big benefit they're having. That's a great program for the family. Now, speaking of family, I got choked up when I was just thinking about Commander Chuck. I was like,
I know it.
It's Cousin Chuck.
On the mama side.
Right, yeah, definitely. No, in this case, it would have been my daddy's side. You know, Chuck, every week when I talk to you, you just never know if you're going to be my brother, my cousin, my nephew. I slide you in there some kind of way. Anyway.
You've been having a good guess on there.
I have good guess all the time, baby.
I know. Look at you. Well, I posted that picture of you and the chief of police on my Twitter account.
Oh, did you?
I did,
You know, I need to do some filters on some of these photos so I can cut layers off and lines, you know, like somebody I know that she's always filtering. I said, girl, you need to let somebody see how you really look. No, no. Chuck, I know there's no filters for traffic, right?
Oh, are you kidding? In this town?
How we look going home today?
Right now, I'm looking at a crash. They're trying to move it right now as we speak. They just got the last of the damaged vehicle out of your way here on 24 westbound at Shelby. And now it's loaded down pretty good here on 24. It's already crazy enough here up by the football stadium as you travel east or westbound on 24. Harding Place at Nolensville Pike, there's just been a crash with injuries just occurred at that intersection within the last 30 seconds. And it's tied up in Brentwood on Concord Road, just east of the Governor's Club. I don't live in that area, trust me, but I know that area very well, and I know that anytime there's a wreck on Concord Road, it is a mess down in Brentwood because of that accident with injuries. I'm Commander Chuck with your traffic, sponsored by Princess Hot Chicken. We'll keep you updated. You keep it right here all afternoon long.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Here's a community reminder from listener-supported Jazzy 88. If you're planning on being a volunteer at this year's WFSK 48-Hour Radiothon, October 5th through 7th, please contact our office by phone at 615-329-8754 or send us an email at info@fisk.edu. It's our 12th annual around-the-clock big event, and it always brings strong community support, good vibes, laughs, fun, fellowship, food, and of course, we're raising donations to support the operation of nonprofit WFSK. To find out more, contact our office at 615-329-8754.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is also being brought to you by Mount Zion Baptist Church. Join the Mount Zion Baptist Church weekly prayer call every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. Central. Request prayer or listen to the playback of the call at theprayercall.org. For more information, please call the church office at 615-254-7296 or download the free Mount Zion Baptist Church app from your favorite app store. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And this hour, we are back on our leadership series with the topic, today's workplace challenges and the future of work. And let me introduce to you organizational expert Karen Madsen. She has enjoyed success as a corporate executive before pursuing a portfolio career comprised of research, writing, consulting, teaching, speaking, and creative pursuits. And as a versatile leader across multiple industries, Karen developed, led, and implemented numerous organizational initiatives around the globe. And today, this East Coast transplant to Silicon Valley, and we'll get the quick story on that, is a principal of co-design of work experience, where she enables organizations with innovative approaches and customized solutions for intimidating challenges. And this world of work today, it can be intimidating for some and challenging for others. And I am so happy to have you on the show, Karen. How are you today?
Good. It's an honor to be here on your show.
Thank you. Now, let's get the quick story on how you became the trans. Like the background stuff, because that's from one coast to the other. What happened?
Yes.
Well, is this workplace related?
Yes. Although this last move to California was a personal choice. But every move before that, and then my husband and I counted 9 moves together.
Oh, wow.
Which included stints in Ireland and the Midwest as well. So we've moved and lived in many different places and traveled to many countries as well. So, but this last place that we moved, everything else was kind of career or vacation oriented. Mm-hmm. And this last place was a choice. We said, you know, we could live anywhere in the world. Where would that be? And between the two of us, we felt that we could have more opportunity where we are.
It's
not cheap to live here, but it is a great community, a lot of interesting people, and building our network here has been a wonderful gift. And we found a church as well.
Yeah, okay. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, well, as you've done this 9 city or 9 place move across the country and the world, did you do organizational style of work in each one of these places? So your expertise in this subject comes from multidimensional layers in the workplace? Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Between my upbringing as a child of immigrants, mm-hmm. and studying ethnic and cultural studies as my undergrad, mm-hmm. doing graduate studies in organization and leadership, and then mm-hmm. living and working overseas and in different places around the U.S., I learned a lot by experience, but I grew my career actually in the HR mm-hmm. functional area. So yes, I was very close to the people aspect of organizations mm-hmm. and having to work with and affect and lead both strategically and tactically. So yeah. I've been very blessed to have all the experiences I've had that led me to the creation of this book.
Okay, excellent. Which, by the way, today's book is Culture, Your Culture, Innovating Experiences at Work. And before I go into the explaining of the book, I'm curious, and you're not the only organizational author I've had on, but I just want to have your opinion on lately. When you see things in preparation for events, hurricane season, Mother Nature's in control, and that type of thing, and then we look back at Puerto Rico from last year and the disorganization, what is, from an organizational perspective, don't you just want to fix it? I mean, when you see things that are out of whack, kids, give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, my Myers-Briggs I'm an ENTJ, that makes me somebody who goes into organizations, sees something wrong right away and want to fix it. that's a characteristic of my personality preferences. It's sad. I mean, the state of our world today, you know, we could talk about the work culture at large, right, in our society, and how, in some respects, we find things that give it life and others that detract from it. And when we're not paying attention, this is the same in organizations, when we're not paying attention, things deteriorate. And what's happened with these national crises, you know, where at the end of the day, we need to take care of people. We're humans. We need to treat each other like them. And you look at what's going on organizationally, what comes to mind is this favorite quote of mine from David Cooper, writer of Appreciative Inquiry, and it's like, we're perfectly designed for our current results. Mm. So a lot of what we're experiencing has been preventable. Mm. And that's a challenge, because if we're not learning from these, then we're going to repeat our mistakes.
Right.
And to expect that we're going to get better results by doing the same thing is insanity, right?
Right.
So it's really hard. Yeah. It's really hard to see it and try to do whatever we can within our scope of influence. All we can do, but it's hard to see what's going on. It's a shared history that's being created amongst all of us right now.
Absolutely. Now, in your book, you discuss organizational culture, and you say it's not just a hot topic, but in organizational culture is part of your background also in dealing with private industry as well as governmental, because there's two different layers of trying to organize. Okay. can you address that for us, please?
This kind of work, every organization needs culture work. Right. And what I tell people is maybe half actually care about it, and then even fewer are willing to invest in it. And that's the niche where I tend to work. But I worked across all different industries, nonprofits and for profit, and in organizations, anywhere where people are involved and are needed for success, is where this work can be really valuable. So, and all those, even if you look at the same companies in the same industry, very similar products, I mean, their contexts are going to be all different. So, every intervention is going to be different regardless mm-hmm. of the type of organization they are.
Now, in your introduction, you are taking the reader into the concept of, is it Dow, D-O-W-E?
It's on purpose. If you look at the last line in the book, it explains why I choose to pronounce it that way.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to go there towards the end. Now, Dewey, okay, so for folks that are, explain the acronym, and how did you come up with it? And, you know, I know your skill set and your background, but, you know, it's real smart what you did. So share some of that with us.
Sure. Well, design of work experience is a concept, a framework, and a methodology all rolled into one that creates this intentional step-by-step how-to for culture. So you hear about culture, and that's where it becomes a hot topic. Everyone talks about culture. Everyone blames culture after the fact. And yet there was no discipline around creating healthy cultures. And so this book was written out of a frustration with how often we talk about culture after the fact didn't have a discipline around being able to leverage culture on the front end, not as a business liability, but as a business asset. And so the work that I did, you know, it's interdisciplinary by definition because it takes from design thinking and organizational psychology and values-based leadership, all these different aspects of organizational studies and brings them together, integrates them for this culture work. And, you know, believe me, I tried for a long time not to create another model, but it became difficult to explain things when there are different aspects. So it needed to be brought together in a cohesive fashion. So that ended up being the framework of the entire book. And the whole book is structured in explaining people through this model. But at a high level, it's the combination of design and change processes enabled by engagement and capability of people throughout.
Well, culture, your culture. You know, when I first looked at the title before I went down into the subtitle and down into the books, that's another one of those words that can conjure up different things in different people depending on where their head is or ideologies are, correct?
Yeah, sure. I'd be curious what you thought.
Well, you know, I think culture because I'm a black woman, and I'm thinking of my culture, my race.
Sure.
And culturally speaking, or multiculturally, I mean, when I don't use the term culture so much in when it's designed for workplace as I do as I work around the community with individuals or organizations. And I just, it's just another one of those words, like, for example, urban. Urban has, over the years, it's changed. Like, urban used to be black. Now urban is where everybody wants to live, near downtown.
Yeah, the city. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, do you find that when you are doing your trainings and your speeches, you have to thoroughly explain so everybody's on the page with you so they can capture the correct essence of what you're trying to give them in this training?
Yeah, I do. And I do have a definition for culture only because there isn't one universal accepted definition for it. And I use that as a grounding for the work that I do going forward. But I totally hear what you're saying because I'm a woman of color myself. And when you think about culture, it, you know, look at it in an even bigger and higher scale, and it's about interaction, right? It's about experiences. It's about connection. All understandings of the word culture kind of fit into that. But the intent with this book and the title of the book has to do with how do you intentionally culture your culture, because we talk about all these toxic workplaces as if we're victims of it, and when in fact there's something we can do about it. And so it's like, how do you culture it in a way that brings it to life, makes it healthy, makes it something that's successful for both people and the business. But it does speak to your definition of culture as well, because it's about all the social constructs that influence the way we perceive and behave and what's mm-hmm. acceptable and not acceptable, all mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. folded into our identities, right, as women of color, you know, as well as people in society. So it all is connected. It's not necessarily separate spaces. It's an and as opposed to an or.
So now everybody's on the same page, hopefully. And Karen, when we, because some people are scared. Like, does it count? I don't like y'all. Need to just relax. Just relax.
And then, you know, enjoy just, the unfolding. I know somebody said that.
You know, just anything that has to do with race and color. Just take a deep breath, y'all. Exhale now. Come on.
That's right.
Let it go. Karen, in chapter one, common need, you have on page 10, I want to talk about a little bit, it's page 10 and 11, have you respond?
Ooh, I got to get my book in front of you.
Oh, please do, because okay. You can do that while during the break. On page 10, you write, best practices are great when used appropriately, but not when they are counted on as a standalone, one-size-fits-all mm-hmm. solutions. I was just in a meeting That's yesterday, right. They were referring to the best practices. I was like, maybe. So I want you to spend a moment on that, as well as just uh-huh. in the next section below that, the importance of context and uh-huh. how you describe that in the organizational challenges that are faced in the workplace, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah.
So today's book. Wait a minute. We gotta take the break. We gotta take the break first. Today's book is Culture uh-huh. Your Culture, Innovating Experiences at Work. If you have a question or comment for my guest, the number is 615-329-8810. If you're in a quandary trying to figure out how are we gonna do this organization on this office and blah blah blah. That's what she does. She helps people, businesses organize. 615-329-8810 for questions and comments. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
Support for Jazzy 88 WFSK comes from the Tennessee Tribune, bringing you positive, constructive news and information about the African-American community every Thursday. There's a special emphasis on business, sports, education, and entertainment. The Tennessee Tribune covers the political, the spiritual aspects of community awareness, and much more. The Tennessee Tribune, bringing you news you can use. Pick up your copy of the Tennessee Tribune today or visit their website at the TennesseeTribune.com. Call their offices at 615-321-3268.
Well, good afternoon. As we keep watch on traffic, it's busy out here on 24 where it merges in with 65, trying to get north of the city, moving a wreck. It's in Hermitage and OHB right near the interstate. Keener there at Harding Pike. That's a wreck in West Nashville. Traffic's really picked up the last few minutes now on 65 as you make your way south of town. This traffic report is brought to you by Princess Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Support for Jazzy 88 WFSK comes from National Shows 2, presenting An Evening with Gladys Knight, live in concert at the Ryman, Saturday, May 11th, 2019. Tickets on sale now at the Ryman box office and Ticketmaster.com.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we pay tribute to the late NEA jazz master, pianist Randy Weston. In conversation at his home in Brooklyn.
So I had Panamanian father and a Virginia mama. I'm born in Brooklyn. So culturally, it was very rich.
And in concert in Panama City. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And we are talking about workplace culture, a new book, Culture, Your Culture, with Karen Madsen. She is an organizational expert and corporate executive, and has applied all that knowledge to the pages of her new book, and we are discussing it now. And you know, while I am talking with you, I cannot help but notice on the news all this water in Puerto Rico that did not get distributed because they had no organization. And so we are sitting here talking about organization, and I see all that government waste. So in the workplace, when the owners or the bosses or whoever begins to look at the bottom line and sees the way they have their company set up or the way they're operating is being a waste, is that when they call in somebody like you, Karen?
They could, yes. And I think one of the first things I would say to them is, are you talking to your people? Because I'm betting you that one of their employees knows how to improve things, at least one of them. And same thing with the water sitting on Puerto Rico. Some people in the government were in the position to understand that this was not the way it's supposed to be and there should be things done. Right. And maybe they weren't heard. So that's one of the first things I would say to a leader is, have you talked to your people lately? And if you're not, what are the conditions that are being set in your current environment, in your current culture, that discourages people from coming forth and offering ideas?
Right. Well, and I think that keeps people from giving ideas, is because the bosses, you know, nobody's boss wants to be told that, you know, you're wasting money or you're being, I mean, when somebody owns a company, how are you going to tell them that? If it's the president of the United States, he's not going to listen. If it's, you know, the mayor of the city, you can't tell. I mean, I know it's frustrating for people, because I'm sure they probably want to say something or would like to see change come in the workplace. How can you get that done without losing your job, you know, without getting fired?
Yeah. You know, I'll talk about it from two perspectives. The first is, as leadership, that's a leadership shortcoming, right? When leaders aren't, all leaders need followers. All leaders need people behind them. Otherwise, they're not leaders, right? And so if they're not creating the dialogue with people that look up to them, then that's a shortcoming of leadership. That's on one side of it. Mm-hmm. On the other side of it, and we've all been there as people that have had careers and worked for other people, and that it, the way I've personally always addressed it is, you know, that's why they hired me. Mm-hmm. You hired me for my skill set and for my knowledge, and it's my job to tell you, sometimes diplomatically, right, to tell you where I see things could be improved. And so whether or not that's listened or heard, because it's, then that the onus is on them. So, but I've done my job if I've said something. And I've provided the advice. And I've been able to raise a concern. Mm-hmm. So if you see something, say something type thing, right? So I actually encourage people, even if they're in environments that won't hear them or they think won't hear them, is to take what's within your mm-hmm. ability to influence and share that information. And then once that's passed on, if people make a choice not to do something about it, mm-hmm. that's not on you. You've mm-hmm. done your good. Mm-hmm.
Now, before the break, I ask you about page 10 in the first chapter about the this paragraph involving best practices as it relates to not being a one-size-fits-all solution. And then this, as you described, the importance of context. Can you give us some ideas of what would be in that context, and what's your thoughts on best practices?
Yeah, so I call it the best practice myth. And the reason why I call it a myth is because there's a misunderstanding that just because it's the best practice, it means it's going to work, or it's going to work the same way in every organization. And so the challenge is, the skill is not about picking the right best practice to implement wholesale. The skill is in curating perhaps the right combination of best practices and then some, maybe creating new ideas and integrating those in order to customize it for the context in which it's intended. So what I say about best practices is, instead of being a little bit right for everybody, it ends up being a little bit wrong for everyone, because it's not a one-size-fits-all. Every organization has its own unique context. And you work at a university, right? So you know that not every university is the same. So because Fisk University does one thing, does that mean it's necessarily going to work in another university environment the same way? The answer is no, right?
Exactly. And I just think that everybody looks and sees what each other does, and your outfit doesn't look good on me. I mean, you know, just that's, you know, that's how I see it. Oh, your shoes are too big for me.
No, that's a great analogy. Yeah.
Well, and I think they all do, and everybody wants to end up looking just alike, you know. And I just
and we know the key is differentiating, yeah, right? It's always about our uniqueness.
Absolutely.
And we don't leverage that, and that's a shame, because, you know, if we're fighting over talent, differentiation is the key here. And you don't get that from doing what everybody else does.
That's right. You'd be an innovator. And that's what the book is about. Well, I bet that's a tough one for people who say, but everybody else is doing it. Isn't that what you have to deal with?
Absolutely. And my challenge to them is, isn't that the easy way out? Isn't that lazy?
Yeah.
Right? Because you're not even looking at every culture initiative should start with a hard look inside first, and understanding the current conditions that create our current results, right?
Yeah.
What is it that are creating these unmet needs? Or where is it that we found aspects or strengths in the organization that give it life and that we need to leverage?
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. It's both sides of that coin.
Now, in the second chapter, you begin to talk about Dowie. And from pages 17 to 29, you lay out your concept and your design.
From FEMA, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's just I'm like, and for people who used to have a problem with that kind of waste, now suddenly feel it's fine, happy days are here again. I don't understand it. Now, how do mindsets change like that in the workplace? Is it, you know, that is not only government, that also happens in private industry, where is it just a fear that comes over people that they're going to lose their employment, that they're willing to just say, oh, okay, it works for me, or you don't have a dog in the fight, so it doesn't matter what you think. I mean, is that, are we just giving up before, you know, we should?
Yeah. It may be that, and that's disengagement. In my field, it's all about increasing employee engagement that encourages people to go above and beyond because they want to, right? And so when people give up, that's disengagement. And changing hearts and minds, you know, really does come down to the culture, that the environment, as I defined it earlier, right? The environment that affects how people behave and perceive things. And when they're in an environment that might shut them down or might not value them, that's the result that these organizations are going to get. But the opposite is true. If you create environments where people thrive, the business will also thrive. And there's lots of evidence of that.
So that means you want people's input, even if, you know, it does indicate that, you know, NASA, we have a problem, but I would think that I would want to hear it so we can fix it versus saying, no, we don't have a problem. That's your lying eyes. I mean, because that to me is like, you're wasting money. I mean, it just, and it's very frustrating for the employees, isn't it?
Absolutely is. And so what do? They leave. If they have a choice, they leave. And that's a loss to the organization because they take their talent elsewhere. and maybe that elsewhere is their competitor. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that employee goes and starts a competing company and swallows them up, you know? So organizations, if they're not thinking about the power that culture has in the success of their business, they're missing out. There's not only huge potential that's being left on all these water bottles being left on on the runway, not just that, it's also the fact that they're not taking advantage of it.
Right.
And they're not paying attention. It'll blow up on them.
Right. And they're not addressing the need that is global. 38 million bottles of water. Are you kidding me? Flint, yeah. Michigan will never have to want another drop because they would certainly have it.
It's right there.
Because I know the resources, governmental resources, just drying up there for them for water. And there it sits, you know, on the runway in Puerto Rico, 38 million. And those people could have used it. If that is not a classic example of a culture that needs to change, I mean, my God.
What is the state of American culture today? That's the question of the day.
Oh, Lord, it certainly is. Now, Karen, when you, how do you use your book if you're like team building or if you're trying to, if you're a new executive coming in or new whomever, and you're trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel, or, you know, make yourself look like you have, what a concept. How do you use this book? How do you use this book to help you to get people to buy into it?
This book is written as a guide for people. There's only so much you can convince them through reading it. I behoove people to experience it because they'll see the power that it has and the type of relationships that it creates as a result of this work. You build innovation skills, you build employee engagement, you leverage capabilities. There's a lot of pluses that come out of it. And so, you know, what's the cost to talking to your employees? That's what I said. What is so scary about talking to them? So if you're a new leader, take a look at this book and see if it can help you create a different environment or the kind of environment that the rest of the company is going to be paying attention to.
Definitely. And lastly, let's go into the very final, in this minute here, so the very final section. I know I skipped over a lot, y'all. I'm sorry. But in chapter 10.
No, but there's one point I do want to add in, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And that is this whole issue of diversity. I get called out a lot.
Really?
And at the end of the day, diversity is a cultural challenge.
Mm. Why?
So they need to set the conditions where diversity thrives.
Why is that?
Because people tend to look at diversity in terms of numbers, and they're going to be recruiting till the cows come home if they don't create the experiences and the conditions where diverse talent thrives.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So are you doing, are you speaking on that as well?
Yeah, I can talk about anything culture.
Okay, now,
do
you address that in the diversity piece specifically is there a chapter in the book?
Yeah, actually, in the chapter 10, there's all these targets that you can use the design of work experience for, and diversity is one of them.
Yeah, that was what I was going to spend some time on. This has really been interesting because, I mean, as you see, you know, frameworks change and things change. I got a couple dozen more questions I'd like to ask you. But, I know, but I'm out of time. Yeah, I'm going to have to get back with you because this is, the workplace culture is, you know, as long as I work, I'll be involved in it.
That's right. We all partake.
Yes, definitely. Now, Karen, tell our audience how they can keep up with what you're doing and find out more about your work.
Sure. I have a website, www.designofworkexperience.com. But you can also find me on Twitter at Karen Jaw, on LinkedIn, on Facebook. I'm not hard to find, so I would love everyone's engagement.
Excellent. And I hope they do tune in to those resources, and we are going to have this up on my podcast.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'll send you a link so we can get the audience that missed the whole show. Maybe they can hear the whole thing. Karen, thank you so much. This, has been interesting for me. Karen John Madsen, and her new book is Culture, Your Culture, Innovating Experiences at Work. Have a wonderful rest of the day, okay?
Thank you so much, Sharon. It's great talking with you.
You too. Bye-bye. And we'll have to pull her back in, you know, when we talk these organizational and cultural talks. It's good to have the experts, you know. Anyway, we are going to get Ron's on deck and on duty to get our afternoon take you home news, and then we have our rush hour traffic and Commander Chuck on deck on duty. So you all don't touch that dial, because we'll be right back.
Listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.